Session number 12786, Major Edward Wright, Reel 1.
Could you tell me, please, whereabouts you were born?
I was born at Greenwich.
Which year was that?
1918.
What did your father do for a living?
He was an electrical contractor.
Did you go to school in Greenwich?
No, by that time we were living in Bournemouth.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school at Homefield School in Bournemouth and at Peterson School at Winchester.
How old were you when you left?
18.
To do what?
I went to do a job in London, in an office in London.
How did you come to be in the army?
While I was working in London, I enlisted in the Territorial Army, in the London Rifle Brigade.
And when war came, what were you doing then?
I was working in an office.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I wasn't surprised because it had been obvious for some time that it was going to happen.
How did it affect you militarily?
Well, immediately on the outbreak of war, we were embodied for full-time service.
Were you in London when the Blitz occurred?
No, but by that time we were stationed outside London. But I did experience one or two nights of Blitz while I was on leave.
Can you describe what happened?
Not a great deal. I was invited, if that's the right word, to go up on the top of a tall building and watch it. It was an interesting experience.
Where was this?
This was in Clerkenwell in London.
So the bombs weren't falling anywhere near you?
Not too near, there were quite a lot falling within half a mile or so.
What did the view look like?
Oh, it was very fiery, of course, and the quite a lot of fires were generated.
Where did most of the bombs seem to be dropping?
I think down by the river, and also around places like Smithfield and the areas towards Westminster, from the point that I was looking at.
Did you feel any sense of dismay?
Oh, yes. Well, London was being knocked about rather badly.
Did you feel that we could win the war?
Yes, I think so. Whether our confidence was a bit misplaced at that time, I don't know. But, yes, I don't think we had much doubt we were going to win in the end.
Now, I think that you joined the Royal Hampshires. Can you tell me about that, please?
Yes, I went to an officer cadet unit in Colchester at the time of Dunkirk, and that was a 4-month course, and I passed out and was gazetted as a second lieutenant in September 1940. And I was posted directly to the 2nd Hampshires, who were in Lincolnshire.
Were you on coastal defence duty?
Oh, no. We were an operational first-line unit. The 2nd Hampshires were part of the 1st Guards Brigade, and They had been withdrawn from through Dunkirk, and indeed the next 2 years, between September 1940 and October November 1942, they were spent in quite rigorous training.
Now, Now, I think that you arrived in Tunisia in November 1942. Can you tell me how that came about, please?
Oh yes, the Second Hampshires had by that time been put into 78th Division, which was the first division to land firstly in Algeria, and then took part in the advance into Tunisia. We landed in Algiers, and after a few days we were put on a train which took us right into Tunisia itself, to what was known as the railhead.
Was there any opposition to the landing in Algiers?
I think not. The landing had taken place when we arrived. Our landing was quite peaceful on a normal dockside, down gangway onto a dockside.
So you said that you went by train to
A railhead at a place called Souk Ahras.
What happened there?
Oh, then we were moved forward to a concentration area in preparation for being committed to battle, because the 78th Division was pushing for Tunis, and they had come to a halt about 20 miles short of Tunis, and there they'd been brought to a halt rather decisively, and the leading brigades which had been committed were in fact in a bit of trouble by that time, and they obviously needed some reinforcement from people like ourselves, who were part of the 3rd Brigade coming, not third in number, but the reserve brigade which was coming forward.
What position did you hold in the battalion at that time?
I was the 2IC of a company.
Which company was that?
Z Company.
How soon was it before you got into action yourself?
Firstly, on the 29th of November, so it didn't. More or less immediately after we arrived in the area. Well, I think that the first experience of action we had was when the enemy mounted an attack on our forward companies. We had two companies forward and the remainder in reserve. I was with one of the reserve companies. But I saw, though I didn't participate myself, a very interesting attack by one platoon of our company, which was committed to attack a position of one of our or to counterattack a position of one of our forward companies. They'd had a platoon overrun or a platoon area partly overrun, and in accordance with a predetermined plan, one platoon of our company, that is of Z Company, was detailed to mount an immediate counterattack, and it was most successful, rather expensive. The platoon commander and a number of his men were killed and wounded, but it repulsed the enemy attack, and indeed they didn't come back for more till the next day.
What was your own vantage point to see this?
Obviously I was very concerned to watch what was happening. I was, I suppose, about 500 or 600 meters away, watching this from the edge of a wood.
And this was, you say, about the 29th of November?
This would have been, I think, on the 30th. On the 29th, we arrived and dug in, or we took over positions of the 5th Northamptons, and did a certain amount of digging in a fresh position and so on. And this happened on the 30th, the following day. When
were there any settlements nearby?
There were a few huts occupied by Tunisians, but I think most of them had left the area very wisely, because it was quite obvious there was going to be a confrontation, shall we say.
What do you remember happening next, personally?
I took out a patrol that night to try to establish whether the enemy had occupied a ridge in front of our forward positions, and I found that they had not, actually.
What did it feel like taking out your first patrol?
Oh, it's a thing. One undertakes with a certain amount of trepidation, but then nevertheless, it was a sort of thing we had trained very hard to do. And I was concerned to see that the thing was properly conducted, and that the men in the patrol did what they should do, and they did.
And then?
The following day, there was another enemy attack, which again was repulsed by a single platoon counterattack, which was very remarkable, really. That one of the other platoons of Z Company, that's not the platoon that had done the counterattack the previous day, because that was rather short of men by then. Another platoon was launched to deal with an enemy advance into the battalion area, and that too was successful. I think both these attacks were successful because they were launched with great determination, but they were launched quickly. The enemy had got into certain positions in the battalion area, but they hadn't had time to reorganise themselves, and it just showed that if you're going to do a counterattack like that, do it quickly, don't waste any time. And they were both very successful. Again, they weren't without losses. In this case, both the platoon commander and his platoon sergeant were both wounded, but nevertheless they did what they were intended to do, and they were successful. And again, things were very quiet after that for about 12 hours. There was, when I say very quiet, I mean there was no further ground advance. There was a deal of mortaring and shelling going on, there was no further attempt by the enemy to get into our position that on the ground that day. But I think they were. In fact, I know they were working around the flanks of the battalion position, or working around the left flank of the battalion position, and making some headway there.
Which unit was on your left?
The East Surrey is on our left.
What was the next memory?
Well, this is nearly the point at which I signed off, because we were still stationed in a wood. Where we dug in, we were immediately behind battalion headquarters, and on that following day, which was the 2nd of December, I was wounded by an 88 millimeter shell which came over and burst in the trees above my slit trench, and I really wasn't effective after that, and so I was taken back, I think, to the regimental aid post, and there I think I was drugged up quite a bit, because I don't remember a great deal of what happened after that. Or at least my memory is a little bit hazy. I can remember snatches of what happened, but at some stage I do know that I was on a stretcher by then, and I was loaded onto a vehicle, and the vehicle, well, I think it was a 3-ton vehicle, but I'm not certain of this, and there were a number of other wounded loaded onto the same vehicle with me, and from what I've been told, and again, my recollection is a bit hazy, because I think I'd been drugged up quite a bit. The vehicle drove off and was obviously intending to evacuate us to a rear area, but I think the driver took a wrong turning and drove into the enemy lines. And there was no shooting, I don't think. The vehicle was was halted, and I do recall a lot of shouting, but there was no firing at that stage. But the fact of the matter was, we were prisoners.
Do you have any memories of the actual 88 millimeter shell which wounded you?
Well, yes,
of the explosion.
Sorry.
Of the explosion.
Oh yes, yes. I remember that quite clearly.
What exactly happened?
Well, it lifted me in the air. I know that. I recall that. And it made quite a big what appeared to be quite at that time to be quite a big hole in my back. Fortunately, that healed in due course. There's still a scar there, of course.
How did the Germans treat you on capture?
Well, I don't quite well. I mean, I've no grounds for complaints. My first clear recollection is which is when I think I was recovering proper consciousness, was being in a long low building, which where both German and British wounded were being treated. It was a long low building, and I surfaced at night time, but there were orderlies moving around with hurricane lamp or the German equivalent of a hurricane lamp, and they were treating I assumed to be doctors. Then men in white coats who were treating the wounded.
Were the British wounded getting exactly the same treatment as the Germans?
As far as I could see, yes. There was no there was nothing I could complain about. I didn't get much treatment, actually. I think, quite frankly, it was a little discouraging, you say, but a German in white coat came along, had a look at me, and said, kaput, and passed on. he was wrong, of course, but that was a little discouraging. But after that, I think the following day, we were moved in a vehicle to another building, which I think was not too far from Tunis Airport, and there we weren't really treated, but we weren't neglected in the sense that German orderlies came round and gave us water, which is what I personally really needed, and you know, I had nothing to there was no ill treatment, There was perhaps a shortage of treatment, but nothing that one could really complain about.
Did the Germans seem to have adequate drugs and bandages and other medical equipment?
It's difficult to say that because they did put a dressing on of myself, and there was no complaint about that. But they didn't do any other, didn't engage in any other treatment at all.
No morphia injections or anything like that.
No.
Now, we'll jump ahead and miss out your captivity in Italy, we may please, and go on to Northwest Europe campaign. And can you tell me in detail the preparations which you personally made for the actual D-Day landing, please?
Yes. I was with commanding platoon in the 1st Hampshires, we had, in the spring of 1944, we'd undergone what we called combined operations training, that is training in assault landings. We went up to, there was a training centre up in Inverary in Scotland, where I'd been before with the 2nd Battalion actually, and we went through quite a rigorous training programme. In landing from assault craft, and then we were moved back down to the New Forest, and we did two quite big exercises involving practice assault landings, one on the Isle of Purbeck and one on Hayling Island, and then we were towards the, I'm not sure the exact day, but in late May, the camps were sealed. The camps we were in were sealed. That is to say that nobody was allowed out, and only certain designated persons were allowed in, and those people had to be carefully screened, so to speak, and indeed had to wear. Had to wear a distinctive mark on their epaulets to show that they were unbriefed persons, because at that stage the briefing of the preliminary briefing for the landing itself had just begun. There was. There was in late May, I think it was about the 30th, we were moved to Southampton. This is an exercise we'd done before, so though all of us knew that this was the real thing, but of course the civilians who were walking the streets of Southampton and so on. They'd seen this before, and so they had no particular reason to believe that this was the actual the beginning of the actual landing. We were put onto the same ships we've been using in previous exercises. The one I was on was called the Empire Arquebus. These had landing craft assault hoisted on the davits, and on our exercise training and in the actual landing, we loaded from with the landing craft assault actually hoisted on the davits, and then when they were fully loaded, then we were lowered down and formed up into our various groups to carry out the actual landing. As is well known, of course, the original landing was supposed to be on the 5th of June, but it was postponed for 24 hours. Because of the poor weather conditions, and indeed, of course, as well known, General Eisenhower had to make that very difficult decision as to whether to go ahead on the 6th of June or not. And he did decide to go ahead, and he was proved right, of course. But the conditions were very poor, and that did have quite an effect on the landing. It had quite an effect on the landing because we had a very bumpy ride in to the beaches, and of course a lot of the assault. A lot of the support that we were intended to have didn't materialise because of the weather conditions. The DD tanks, the swimming tanks, I believe they did try to get them to launch them, I didn't see this happening. But in fact, the first ones to be launched were sank, and so these tanks did not land before us before the infantry as had been intended, but came along later and landed direct from their craft onto the beach. So that was one thing that went wrong. Right? A lot of the self-propelled guns or the craft carrying them had to turn back because they couldn't cope with the conditions. And so the actual weather conditions that really, which were very rough really, for an operation of this sort. Didn't help, and this was a common experience amongst the whole battalion, and I think the division come to that, in the landing craft assault, which was roughly one platoon per craft, there was a lot of seasickness. And of course, every succeeding wave poured a lot of spray into the boat. So by the time we got to the beach, we were thoroughly soaked, and what is more important, our weapons and equipment. But it was a very rough run-in. The run-in was about 7 miles, which is what we've been trained for, and I believe that I understand that was shorter than the Americans went for a longer run in, which I think was probably even worse.
Can we say at this stage which platoon you were commanding and which beach you landed at?
Yes, we were. I was commanding a 16 platoon of Z Company. I was not a Chechen. 16. I was commanding a platoon of Charlie Company, the 1st Hampshire's.
Z Company was the company you were in at Toboga.
Yes, that's right. Yes, so I'm getting confused.
That's all right.